podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Scouser Tommy's. I'm Jim Boardman, and as usual, I'm with Jay Reid. And we're going to talk about this this stop-start strange roller coaster of a season. This is our second attempt at this, by the way, because someone's computer crashed. Good old Apple. If they're looking, you know, if they're listening, maybe you can send me a new one. But if not, only kidding. If not, we'll just carry on, won't we? We'll just see how far we get this time. And my laptop has just decided to be a bit like Liverpool this season, because as we were saying earlier, Jay, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, hasn't it? We've had ups and downs. We had the ups and downs, we had the 6-0 win, we've had the game against Napoli. We last time we recorded, we just had a bit of a rough patch, and we said, you know, maybe things are going to get better, and they did straight away with that big win, that big 6-0. But oh, was it 6-0 in the end? Was it more than that? Sorry, 9-0. Sorry,
wrong way round.
I'm giving it away, aren't I? I'm giving it, making it easier. I think that's because it was so unbelievable, and that is part of the season. It's been an unbelievable stop start strange season, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, before we lost the beginning bit, we said yeah, it was a roller coaster, and you know, we had a false dawn in sort of climbing to the top, and thought, well, maybe this is it. Now we turn the corner, and then before you know it, we were straight down the drop again. And it was no bigger drop really than Napoli. If anything, it was more of a log flume. We just hit the water, crashed, got soaked. And you know, we all come away heads down and didn't really know where to go next because our clothes were soaked. And you know, usually at that point in a theme park, you just sort of go home and give up, or maybe grab a McDonald's or something on the way back and just, you know, drown your sorrows in the back of the car with soggy clothes. But we picked ourselves back up. You know, we found some more tokens. We've gone again, as they say. We had a nice win midweek. We huffed and puffed, but we got there. And you know, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that we're not playing this weekend, because Chelsea, the new manager and all that, I know they only drew with Salzburg midweek, but you know, Graham Potter is a man I sort of do admire. He's done it the right way in terms of climbing to the top, and you're always apprehensive going into games with clubs with new managers, and I know it's Chelsea, and I know they change managers more than people change their underwear, but it's just one of them things. They're never nice games. We played them 4 times last year. We drew with them every single time. I wouldn't have fancied going in to play them in our current iteration of what we are. So, you know, the lovely international break that we all really look forward to every single 5 times a year for, you know, those brilliant Nations League games that we're all enthralled by might be a blessing, where we can get some lads back from injury. I know if Klopp's to be believed on the injury front, we're probably going to get the likes of Konate back. Hopefully Jones is somewhere along the line coming back. Henderson might be back, I think, over the international period. And the new lads we brought in, Arthur, I know Darwin's probably going to Uruguay. We can sort of bed these lads in and work on a few things, because we do need to work on them. I think that has to be all and end all. It's not working currently, so we need to find something that does, and we need to find it fast, because we're in danger of letting Cyborg, Haaland and Man City just run away with everything. And you know, just when you thought maybe Dortmund and Jude Bellingham were going to get the better of them on Wednesday night, he, you know, elevates his foot 9 foot in the air and volleys over with a back heel, and the inevitable happens. And you don't want to feel like that this season, but we can't let them be like that. And we're the only ones, I think, who can actually lay a glove on them and we need to sort ourselves out and figure a way out to lay gloves on them, because we don't want the season over before it really began.
No, that's right. And I mean, there's not just them as well this season. There's like more oil money, as we spoke about before, has come into the game. So we've got to watch, you know, Newcastle, Chelsea, who were built on oil money, if you like. The current Chelsea are now being, you know, they've been run by someone with even more money, who obviously doesn't seem to like the idea of keeping a manager too long. But as you say, there's that big risk of playing those teams that have just had a manager change. We've seen it before. Even if it ends up being that the manager change wasn't any good, they seem to always seem to get a good first game as players kind of respond and up the game and stuff. So you're right, this international break's come at a good time. One of the things we were talking about earlier as well, and you kind of alluded to it then, is about getting the players working together. And I know some will be away, but you know, we've got a problem in midfield. Now, at the moment, you could argue the problem is because of injuries, because if every single midfield player we've got was fit, we'd have quite an array of players to choose from, and an array of good players to choose from. But injuries to our midfield are becoming like injuries to our centre-backs a couple of years ago, that there's no one staying fit long enough to have a decent run. We're having to rely on players like Henderson and Milner, who, as good as they've been for this club, and I know not everyone is a fan of either of those players, or one or both of those players, but they are well appreciated, but they're older than they were when we won the league. They're older than they were when we won the Champions League, and relying on them both at the same time isn't helping us. Is this an issue, do you think, as well with recruitment, that we must have known that these players are getting older, that some players are leaving, that some players haven't quite, you know, recovered from injury at all, as good as they are? You know, you think of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's, you know, had terrible trouble with injury. He was such a good player till he got that injury for us. Have we sort of, you know, at times as a manager, you need to be ruthless, and as much as you might love these players, if they can't put a shift in because their injuries are just wrecking things for them, can we afford not to buy in their place? I mean, it feels like this was all predictable this summer, wasn't it? And I think, as you said earlier when we started recording it, there's one player we've not replaced in that midfield from a couple of years ago for various reasons, who would have made a hell of a difference if he was still around.
Yeah. It's negligence, as I said before, we lost that bit first. But on somebody's behalf, it's negligence in terms of lack of recruitment in midfield, because it was evident when we let Gini Wijnaldum go. If you let a player go who plays, I don't know, like 4,000 minutes, the stats guys on AI who do the pods so brilliantly know exactly how many minutes he played, how very few games he actually missed. You can't let that walk out the door and not replace it, or gamble on the fact that, you know, you've got Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones there, who were, you know, a year younger than what they are now, young developing players. We didn't really know what Harvey Elliott was. Probably still don't know what he is. I've got a few mixed views on him, and he's a young kid, so he gets the, you know, the advantage of time on his side to develop. Curtis Jones, I don't really know what's going on with him. He seems to pick up a lot of little niggles and knocks. And, you know, as you mentioned, Oxlade-Chamberlain is more time in the physio's table than he is on the pitch. And aging legs in Henderson, Milner, even Fabinho and Thiago, now the wrong side of 30, as people would say in the you know, the professional football game. But what we've got in Thiago is a man who runs the game, who changes us and turns us into a different animal, a different beast. And I referenced, we'd say before, I referenced him to Steven Gerrard, and we all thought those days were gone, where this man in the middle of the park was running the game, and if he's not there, we're a shadow of a team. And it's negligent that we've got to this point, that we've got to rely on this fella, and he puts more into the game than anyone else. He's a fan on the pitch, which, you know, he's not grown up as a Liverpool fan, but his passion is desired, the way he constantly turns to the crowd to get them up. And it was a joy to be there on Tuesday night just to watch him, and he basically relayed everything that we were feeling in the stands. He wanted it more than anyone else, and when you've got someone like that, you've got half a chance, but to only have one really at the moment doing that is a bit of a worry as well. maybe that's something that we need to find within ourselves, the inner desire, the inner fire, the inner passion. Maybe, you know, the complacency word is creeping in, and it's up to Klopp and the boys to ooze this out to the lads and, you know, not give up the fight and, you know, not just be happy with what we've got, because, you know, managers of yesteryear certainly wouldn't have allowed that. It didn't happen on their watch. If you didn't put a shift in, you didn't play, and if you didn't want to be there, you were out the door. And, you know, Klopp's loyalty is a strength as much as it's his weakness, and you'll know better than I will about managers of yesteryear. If you didn't want to be there, then you weren't there for long. So something needs to change. I don't know whether it's the recruitment, whether it's Klopp. Klopp seems to have taken it on his chin and said, like, I thought we were okay, and then I realised that we weren't. Whether he's just the face of the club and saying that to, you know, divert attention, that can only be left to speculation. But I think it's pretty evident that we can't go probably into January and onwards and neglect that part of the field, because we're weak in there, and we brought one lad in the summer. We probably needed two or three. If we can get one lad in January and then another one or two next summer, then, you know, maybe the problem is quickly plugged and turned over and replaced. But at the moment, it's the massive elephant in the room in terms of where our downfall and weaknesses.
Yeah, it is. It's worrying, and I think we all looked at I always call it the COVID season, that horrendous season when we just lost all our centre backs. And I look back at that season and think that could have so easily been avoided. But it's easy in hindsight to say these things, because we never knew it was going to get that bad. But we now know it can get that bad, and it is worrying. And I think that, you know, that means you have got to look at letting players go, and that means even if they're not fully fit. And as you say, the loyalty thing, it's awful to do it, but I think most players would accept that's the situation and that's how football is. And if for whatever reason, you know, luck can win you games, luck can lose you games, and luck can ruin your career because of an injury, or give you an opportunity because of an injury. I mean, sometimes as a club as well, you drop lucky with injuries. I always look back to Robbie Fowler, that he was quite clearly going to make it at some point, but maybe once he got his chances, as soon as he did and make the impact he did, if it wasn't for injuries. And so, but again, in a way for Liverpool at the time, it was luck that Robbie was at that stage in his development that he could come in and show what he can do. And at the moment, I don't know, it just seems, I mean, is Carvalho a midfielder? That's a question we were asking earlier before we got cut off. Is he a midfielder? Is he not? Is he, either way, is he the player that we were looking at before the end of last season, thinking this is the player who can make a difference and keep us going? Because no other club stands still. If you want to get somewhere in football and you are really breathing down someone's neck for a season, the next season, you're not going to be breathing down their neck if you stand still. You've got to keep up with them. And that's what we just haven't done. We just haven't kept up with them. And I wonder, is it going to get out of our reach? Is the oil money going to take it away from us? Can we not afford to compete with other teams? Is it the owners being frugal? Is the cost of the new stand again? Is that hitting things? The loss of money that we had over COVID, are we still paying that back? I don't know. And it is worrying, because I just don't see Liverpool being like this. Usually it's just... And once you're behind, it's hard to get back again.
Yeah, I don't think we're short of cash. I think, you know, there's enough experts in the financial world out there who will say we're pretty all right for cash. And the way the club financed these new stands that they've done, we do it in a smart way. So they're paid for in like 4 to 5 years, I think, or something like that. And I'll just say that Anfield Road stand, the first game I went to was Ajax this week, this season, due to one reason or another, I've missed 4 to 5 games. But that stand is coming on pretty quickly, and it is big and it's mighty impressive. So it's always good to go to the ground and see the developments of stuff like that. But yeah, it's not, you know, the £1 billion stadium that Spurs have built. And I know Spurs then got a refinanced the loan and stuff like that, and they've invested a lot of money in the squad, because, you know, as you say, if you're standing still, then you're going backwards in the current game. And, you know, if we put where we are, I know we spent a few quid over the summer, but we recouped a lot as well. So standing still when the likes of Chelsea are throwing money around like it's going out of fashion, Spurs have invested a lot. They seem to be all in on Conte. You know, Arsenal are spending money and look to be improving slowly, a young developing team. United, they're spending cash, whatever, you know, the green and gold army say and Gary Neville on a soapbox shouts about. The Glazers do not refuse to spend money. They put money into that club and, you know, they take money out, yes, but, you know, there's arguments to be had both ways, but they're certainly not FSG in terms of balancing the books. They're not short in throwing 60, 70 million quid out, you know. So we are way behind in terms of our cash expenditure on players, and obviously City is City. They'll cook the books more than, you know, poor Hollywood on Bake Off. So, you know, it's something that it's just one of the things we've grown to accept it, but should we accept it? That's the thing. Like, we could have just a few more shiny tins in the pot. You know, we were inches away from a title a couple of years ago. We were, you know, a point or two away from City the last few years. We were, you know, so close in Champions League finals against Real Madrid, where, you know, games are won and lost on, you know, moments. You do wonder if there was just a little bit more quality in the team and being able, you know, when Mo Salah comes off in the Champions League final because Ramos tried to break his arm, that you're bringing Adam Lallana on. It's not the change you want. Last season, you know, the midfield was the midfield. That's all we had. And there was no sort of change up there. And obviously the events outside and stuff we've got into that may have influenced the players and so on and so forth. But you do all just think, like, quite often we've looked at our bench and thought there's one or two players there, and wouldn't it be nice just to have four or five or six players? And we very rarely seem to have that option with us. And is it down to expenditure? Is it down to fitness? It's probably a bit of both. But yeah, it's just one of them things where we reluctantly accept it, but we probably shouldn't do. But would we want it? Dirty or your money, I suppose you wouldn't know until you were in the situation. You probably put yourself in Newcastle's shoes, where if you put a gun to their head and said, like, are you happy with this? They're going to say, well, yeah. But if you want to be, you know, humanely right and say, well, look where it's coming from, it's not the best source of cash in the world. But, you know, football fans want to win games, they want to win trophies, and sometimes you will just overlook that. And I'm not asking for the sugar daddy, I'm not asking for oil money, but I'm just asking for a bit more hand in the pocket than, you know, clenched fist.
Yeah, I think I've thought about that with Newcastle, and if we were in their shoes or whatever, and we easily could have been. I mean, Dubai tried to buy us all those years ago, and it's not too many steps away from that to what the Saudis are like, for example, and it's still oil money behind it all at the end of the day. In fact, still the same people who were kind of helping Dubai try and help us are the people who in the end help Saudi buy Newcastle. But I think I've worked out, if it was us, we'd probably go along with it, because it, especially if in Newcastle, like in Newcastle's case, it's have the oil money or probably get relegated in the end, because you can't survive forever the way you were being run then. But I think we'd kind of accept it, but we'd also be campaigning and we'd be working on our owners and maybe starting a fight with them in a way that said, look, you've got to change your ways, and maybe open dialogue and maybe get somewhere with them, who knows. But I think most football fans, at the end of the day, what you do is you want to sit there for those 90 minutes enjoying that game and feeling like you're going somewhere, and maybe we would ignore it. But regardless of that, they're allowed to do it under all the current rules that are in place. So that's what we're up against, that's who we're competing against. And that, in a way, to me, the way the season's going to be is that we're going to get, you know, there's no easy teams anymore, and we've got to be ready for that. But we should be the team that they all fear, and I just don't feel we've got that at the moment. I don't think teams are coming to Anfield frightened, but I think teams do go to play City and they're frightened. And it's, you know, I've seen it in the past, going back to when Manchester United were winning things. They, you know, they were going on about how great they were, but the amount of times you'd watch a game and their opponents just basically sat back and waited until they got hammered. You know, they'd say we wouldn't want to win, they'd be made up with a draw, they'd just be quite happy if they only lost by one or two. And that kind of attitude was kind of, in some ways, what helped Manchester United to so many titles, because I think teams were scared of them. And why, you know, teams aren't scared of Liverpool at the moment. No one's on form, and there's weaknesses, and they've all worked out the weaknesses. So there's a lot of work to do. But last time we were on a podcast, we tried to be positive, and, you know, I think on the whole, we're still, I don't know, this season's worrying, but when you look at it, it's not actually that far away from being recoverable. I mean, Manchester City haven't won every game. Is there anyone on an unbeaten record still in the league? There's no one on a 100% record in the league now. So, you know, there's still time for things to improve. And maybe now, as you say, international break, we can just sort of reset things a little bit, properly look in depth at what's going on. Players who are staying with us can be worked with in more detail to get them right and get them up for it. And, you know, when everyone is back, there won't be a lot of time between international break and the next game. But we can just maybe get plenty of ideas buzzing around and getting the players who are there to be working on them and just get it into them, get it all instilled in them. And because the way the postponements have gone, we'll have a game in hand on some teams as well. And they're quite a handy thing to have, I find, because everyone looks at the league table and ignores the games in hand. And they're like, you know, points on the board are obviously better than games in hand. But the thing is, people kind of forget the games in hand, and that's when you can start to sneak up on people. So that's what I'm hoping for. By Christmas, you know, we're well and truly forgetting this bit of a bad start to the season, but we'll have to wait and see. One thing that's worth talking about is the reason for the postponement. So we missed games last weekend because all the Premier League games were postponed because the Queen had died. And then this weekend we're missing a game because Chelsea... based in London, obviously, the police are saying that they're basically overrun as it is, dealing with people queuing up to see the coffin and so on. So they can't really spur anyone to police a match. So this game's been postponed as well. And that also then leads us on to thinking, well, what's happened in this country when the Queen died? There's been quite a lot of uproar. And as always, there's people misunderstanding why Liverpool fans boo national anthems, thinking that, I think when it was the FA Cup final, the then Prince William, now the Prince of Wales, was on the pitch and we were booing the national anthem. And people assuming we were booing him. I doubt many people even necessarily realised that he was on the pitch, because the booing of the national anthem, in my view, and most of the people I know, isn't about the Queen. It's because the national anthem is the anthem, in our eyes, it's the anthem of the Conservative government that have let us down for years and years and years. A lot of us might be for or against the Royals themselves, but that's not really, in my view, who the anger is against with the national anthem. It's not the Queen that's been going around making us have to eat out of food banks. And I know we could argue on that with money and stuff, that she's got money and she could maybe help more and things like that. But that's not it. It's not her doing the policies. She's just the wealthy person who is the sort of figurehead of state. She doesn't make the decisions, and that, I think, is a key difference. But of course, Liverpool fans booing that, kind of people who just like to have a gripe, have picked up on that all the time. A lot of them are probably Brexit type people as well, who sort of just want to cause trouble. I'm going to say Brexit type people, I'm on about social media Brexit type people who just love arguing with everybody and think everything's the fault of the French and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, it's just taken away from what we're saying. And there was also some fuss. Well, first of all, let's just talk about the other night, the minute silence. When you watch that back, you'll take your own opinion on whether it was perfectly observed or whether it wasn't. And then whether it wasn't perfectly observed, whether it was observed well enough or not, according to social media and certain places, it wasn't done well enough. And then so there's a load of crap thrown our way, basically. But according to people who were there, that wasn't the case at all, was it? I mean, you were there. What was that minute silence like?
Well, I'll go with things backwards from what you said. So, first of all, it was never stated as a minute silence. It was a moment of silence.
Yeah.
Which was stated, and okay, it may have lasted 30, 35 seconds, something like that. And I think everybody knew going into the game it was never going to be pin drop silence in the ground. It just was never going to be that. It was to be widely expected that there will be some idiots like there is in every single fan base who will want to make their voices heard for one reason or another. And I think the vast majority of Liverpool fans, myself included, adhere to the silence. I was stood in the cop in 304. If anybody knows where that is, it's dead central, right behind the goal, but you know, three quarters of the way back. And I would say 99% of the cop adhered to it, with a few idiots shouting a few things, you know, when stuff was out, there was the other people telling them to shush. And you know, it's sort of the domino effect in terms of, you know, somebody telling someone to shush when they've shouted something is then not being silent, but you know, they don't want to be seen to allow people to say obscene things if that was what people were saying. Everyone's got a right to an opinion, everyone's got a right to a voice. And you know, there's crazy things going on where the police are tackling people lying in the streets with a piece of paper, and they're being much more heavy-handed with them than they are with other things going on in the country. But that's for a much different debate. The video that was circulating on social media was sort of coming from, I would say, around like the media area, where there was probably media plants from certain outlets dying for a little bit of, you know, reaction. And there inevitably was. And, you know, if those microphones are all over the ground, they are going to pick up a few voices saying the wrong things and stuff like that. And, you know, if you listen to it properly, there is people, you know, telling them to shush and be quiet and whatever. And, you know, it was never going to be wholeheartedly adhered to, because, you know, in this part of the world, in this part of the country, it is very anti-establishment. We've gone on about it several times. And, you know, this probably comes full circle in terms of back to the national anthem. And like you say, it's not aimed at the Queen or, you know, the current King, as it now is. For me, the national anthem is sort of a representation of Englishness. And, you know, it's not what the people of Liverpool, the city and the club, what we sort of see ourselves as representatives of. You know, you touched on the Brexit mentality, and you know, the international break coming up, England fans will, without a shadow of a doubt, boo other anthems. They will boo the German anthem. They will give a lot of anti-German songs and stuff like that, like a lot of offensive songs. They're no angels when they go abroad. They're no angels in the stands either. And, you know, it's very hypocritical, and it's just not the behaviour that we sort of see ourselves as. And a lot of the mentality, a lot of it stems also back to politics, that we are very different to the, you know, the typical English sort of approach and mindset. And that's where it comes from, as well as obviously all the political and governments, you know, history and letdowns, which it's all there as evidence for people to see. And, you know, the big one that we don't want to always bring up, but a lot of it comes back to Hillsborough as well. And there's a lot of idiots online saying, you know, we should have respected the silence, because that's what we expect when it comes to us. But totally different thing. And that is stupid for people to bring that up. And, you know, we all we ask for is a bit of respect. And, you know, we did give the majority of respect as what people did to the minute silence. And there's a population of Liverpool who are royalists, there's a population who aren't, who are anti-monarchy, anti-establishment. It's just the way it is. It's not going to change. But I think that there was a lot of media sort of snipers waiting for anything the other night, and we were never going to win either way. Yet we adhered to it, there would have been, you know, comments and quotes to sort of shoot us down. And had we have, you know, had a few idiots, which there was, or had we have gone full Celtic and, you know, displayed banners, then, you know, you're never going to win. You know, people have different sides and opinions. And, you know, if you lived in a world with no opinions, then, you know, you'd just be robots. So I think it's a subject that you've got to sort of tread carefully around. But, yeah, I also think maybe the skeptic in me just sees that the police have called off a number of games this weekend. And if you look at the three games in the Premier League that have been called off, United and Leeds in Manchester, they're saying they haven't got enough police. It's known to be a little bit of a hostile, you know, Pennine derby. Brighton and Palace was originally called off for the trains, which was ironic considering we had to go to London to play Man City in a train strike, but we still had to do that because the FA wanted their game. Yeah. But the train strike's subsequently being cancelled and they still can't do it because, you know, it's deemed as some sort of derby. I don't know what motorway links them, but they're about 28 miles apart.
Yeah, someone said it's known as the M23 Derby. I don't know if that's the right motorway. We'll just go with that. The M23 Derby. But if it's the M23 Derby, why does a train strike make any difference then?
Exactly. And I think we've been tarred with the same brush as what we were tarred with in Paris, where, you know, it's those pesky Liverpool fans going to London. And I think it's been a very easy out for the authorities and the police to say, like, we were going to West London and to play Chelsea. The game could have been played on Saturday. Like, the funeral is until Monday for the Queen. They could have moved the game to Saturday, but, you know, Sky wouldn't have had their TV rights. Chelsea played at home on Wednesday night. So, you know, with this new rule, the Champions League Wednesday games to play in Saturday lunchtime was the only sort of stipulation where you couldn't have that. We could have played at 5:30. We could have played at 8 o'clock Saturday evening. Yeah. The fans would have found a way to London and back. You know, there's extra trains being put on for people to travel from the north of England down to London. Liverpool fans would not have minded an iota. They wouldn't at all. And I think it was an easy out for the authorities and the police. And I think without it actually being put out there, I think we're being tarred with the same brush that we were tarred with in Paris. And, you know, a reputation that is actually false is being put out there. And for me, that's why the game's being cancelled. But, you know, other people will say otherwise.
Yeah, it's just like you've got to watch. There's so much bullshit around. I mean, especially with travelling, you're right. Liverpool and Man City playing in London, trains knackered, no trains to get back on, etc. We're all expected to just get there, that kind of thing. I can remember, I think it was a semi-final. I'm not sure when it was, a few years ago now. Our semi was due to be played, I think. I'll have to try and get it the right way around. I think our semi was due to be played on the anniversary of Hillsborough, so we wanted it switching. So at the time they had, you know, a semi on a Saturday, a semi on a Sunday at Wembley. So I think it was switched around, and I think it was switched so that ours would be on the Saturday, so it wouldn't clash. And then Chelsea were up in arms, and I'm pretty sure this was coming from official channels. It wasn't just like a few trolls on Twitter. I'm pretty sure it was official, but I'd have to check. Complaining that it would be too difficult for their fans to get home on a Sunday after the match. And I'm thinking, so it's all right for us to get home from London all the way up here in Merseyside, but you in London who have to get to another bit of London on a Sunday, it's impossible. And it just, I mean, that's where the bullshit comes in. It's just bullshit. It's just that anti-Scouse sentiment that does exist in this country. And I don't care what anyone says who tries to play it down. It does exist. It happens all the time. If a few people in a crowd of 50-odd thousand make a bit of a din during a moment's silence, then does that mean everybody in that stadium is an horrible person? No. It means a few people were in the category of maybe horrible, maybe not. Maybe they had a good reason for it. But it doesn't say everybody was that way. Most people I know are kind of indifferent about the Queen dying. I mean, I don't know anyone who I think would travel all the way down to London and queue for 14 hours to walk past her coffin. But I wouldn't have a go at anyone who did. If people feel that way, then let them. I think from a grief point of view, a lot of people have felt bad because it's reminded them of their own grief. I mean, personally, my dad died during COVID. It was very difficult to do anything. You know, it was difficult to have a normal funeral service and everything else. Difficult to work out how to travel. And what we did was we walked from my mum and dad's house to the cemetery round the corner behind my dad in the car in the hearse. And that, so the processions and things in London have reminded me a bit of that. But so to me, I think most people are thinking someone's lost someone, you know, it's just the way we are. We respect people when they've lost someone. But this idea that, you know, we're all the same, we're all you know, animals basically because a few people make a din. He's just that. That's the kind of narrative that fed into everything that happened in the 80s with football, because every football fan was painted the same as the minority that caused trouble. And because of what happened with Liverpool in the 80s in Heysel, we got it even more. And again, it was a minority of people who did wrong. No one is saying they were right to do what they did at Heysel. They weren't. But I didn't do it. I wasn't there. I was still at school, I think, at the time. And you weren't even around, probably. So, you know, why do we get it? And it's just because there is this anti-Scouse sentiment. And it's that anti-Scouse sentiment that basically had the government wanting us to go into managed decline all those years ago. And that's what we're angry about. You know, the Queen and the King and all that is maybe a little bit of a separate argument, as you said. But, you know, don't tar us all with the same brush and don't treat us that way. Have a bit of respect for us as well. Maybe you'll get some back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not bothered in terms of what people are doing. I think it's a little bit mental what, like, people are queuing for a day or 12, 18 hours. And I don't think she's even in the box, to be fair.
I think like, it's too much of a security risk in it. She's somewhere
else.
Yeah,
I mean, and not only that, why would you leave a body laying in a hall for 4 days? No. A dead body. She's kept in a cryogenic freezer somewhere. Don't be silly. But yeah, you crack on if that's what you want to do. Like, you know, if it makes you feel a little bit better inside, then yeah, go with it. But, you know, it comes as no surprise that the poor old lady did actually die. Like, she was 96. She looked very frail. You know, and as the saying goes, she had a very good innings, and, you know, she gave her life to a juices and stuff like that. But it's not for me, royalism and stuff like that. I don't really see the point in it. I know the people who is. So Monday, for example, I'm going to take my dog for a walk on the beach and take myself away from the whole thing because, well, I'm quite honestly, I'm just fed up of seeing it on the telly. And it's everywhere you look now. And I want a bit of, like, normalism back in my life. And, you know, the fact that football's gone as well, doesn't really help. The one thing that, you know, a lot of people who probably listen to this podcast see Liverpool and see football. Sorry, Siri, they seem to disagree with me there on my watch. You know, one thing that people do want in football is just to take them away from reality, that 90 minutes or whatever, or to listen to a podcast an hour or two a day. It takes you away from what's going on in the world, and, you know, you can sort of be in your own little bubble. So that's what I'll be doing on Monday. I won't be, you know, plonking myself in front of a telly with tea and biscuits and sobbing into a hanky, but that's me, you know, and if people want to do that, then that's fine. But, you know, don't judge me for doing that, because, you know, there'll be other people all around the country. But, you know, if I'm, as a Liverpool fan, as a Scouse person, puts out there that, you know, I'm spending my Monday on the beach with the dog and taking a 3-hour walk, then I'll be vilified because of where I'm from and the club I support, and that's just wrong. But it'd be fully expected if I did do it. And I just don't know how the country operates like that. And that is why, as well, we've got to be in our bonnets about it, because, you know, you got idiots out there like Carl Froch and, you know, the Middleton guy off SAS saying we should be made to watch this programme on Monday, that this procession that goes on. Like, that is why we just don't agree with the establishment. We don't want to be told what we have to do. We're big enough and strong enough to make up our own minds, because in times in the past we've been told lies, and therefore we're not willing to go with it. We are big enough to stand up, and that's what makes us unique as Scouse people, that we are willing to stand up and have our voices heard. And if you don't want it heard, we'll get more numbers and we'll keep shouting and shouting and shouting. And sometimes you might not agree with us, but it's just the way we are as people. And that's what makes us special. And I think bringing it full circle back to Liverpool and back to the football, you know, that's what we've got to do now. We've got to come together as a club, as a team, as fans, and find a way to have our voices heard, because we're too good to not have our voices heard. We've got too many good things going on for us at this current time to not be, you know, told to lay down and just roll over. We need to come together and stand up and fight, because You know, there's things there for us to be taken in terms of trophies and matches and so on. So, yeah, it was a long-winded way of getting there, but I've sort of probably brought it back to what we actually need to do now going into the, you know, after international break, pre-World Cup period. I think we've got something crazy, like 9 games in October. We need to rally and we need to come together as people and fans as a club.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly as well, just to finish off that whole royal family stuff, there was some questions being raised as well, because Liverpool were one of the last clubs to kind of say, oh, we're terribly sorry the Queen's died, or whatever social media messages that went out. A lot of them probably cut and paste off each other. We were one of the last ones to do it. And when we did it on Twitter, for example, we didn't allow replies. You wouldn't allow replies on a tweet like that. If you've ever looked after a social media account that's got any kind of partisan element to it, like, for example, a football club's social media site, you know what kind of crap you get. And straight away, there would have been people writing bile underneath it. And wherever you think, if people do respect the Queen's died, they do want it to, you know, they do want it to be remembered and all the rest of it, then what happens is you just put that message out there and you let them do that. And anyone who isn't a fan of that message, they can just scroll down to the next thing. And then what the next thing will be is football. And what the thing will be above it is football, because that's what Liverpool are for. And that is what we've said time and again on this podcast and across Anfield Index, I'm sure, that football is your distraction from real life. And when times are good, it's a really good distraction to have, because it's football, it's what you live for. And yeah, we've got to find other things to do. You'll be walking the dog. I'd probably, if I can't think of another excuse, I'll probably finally tidy this room up that I'm sitting in that I've been meaning to do for weeks. Other than that, though, yeah, there's I won't be watching the telly unless I can get hold of it and watch Netflix or something. But that's fine, that's what we do. And if we were going to be forced to watch things, isn't that what we fought for? Well, what our grandparents fought for in the World Wars was freedom to do what we choose to a certain extent. Being forced to watch something on TV sounds more like something Adolf Hitler would have imposed on us. So whoever's coming out with stuff like that maybe needs to have a bit of a think about why they're saying stuff like that. But football, I wouldn't force anyone to watch football, especially some of our games. But, you know, there's been some good games. But this gap, and again, there's people now saying, for whatever reason, we shouldn't have called the games off because of the future pilots that are going to come up. In reality, we shouldn't be in a situation where one weekend of postponements can cause hell in the fixture calendar. And there's just too much greed in football still, that all these different bodies want their piece of flesh. So the World Cup takes a big chunk out of the winter. The football season doesn't end that much later and doesn't start that much earlier to make up for this loss in the middle. And that's partly because, you know full well, clubs are going to be looking at next summer, how many friendlies can we fit in lucrative places overseas? And UEFA are not going to sort of cut down the Champions League a bit. In fact, they want more games. It's just money, 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 isn't it? And there's no one running the game in sort of overhead. There's no one like overseeing it who's not got a vested interest in it. FIFA have a vested interest in getting that World Cup on. So they're not going to say, oh, hang on a minute, let's just cut down what's being played. And as much as we love football, it gets to a point where is the quality getting ruined because there's so many games? And I think it does.
Yeah, you could probably say that's maybe the case, I think. You know, just a quick one. We were having a discussion the other week in work, we're saying, like, the quality of strikers in the English game, like number nine. So we were obviously on about Erling Haaland and the freaking age that he is and stuff, but like such a thing as a number nine these days, and I know we've got one of our own which we're waiting to start firing. Maybe that'll be something we can discuss on a later podcast. But you know, the art of defending and stuff like that these days. Was football better in the '90s? I think maybe the level of players across the board was probably better, I think, in terms of so many, you know, good defenders, so many number nines, so many good midfielders. It seems a lot more, as you say, diluted now, because everyone wants a piece of the action and there's only so much of the pie that'll go round. And, you know, Klopp bleats on all the time, like, we're playing too much, there's too many games and stuff like that. And he gets vilified for it, but he's right, because as much as we love going to football, you want to see good football. And then if it is the case that maybe this season our players are just absolutely, you know, worn down, there's no tread left on the tyres, we do need some new ones. But, you know, if you keep rolling these tyres out, eventually they're going to pop and they're going to burst. And, you know, you can't keep doing it forever. I just don't know where it would end, because you've got some crazy American guy at Chelsea now calling for all-star games, which, you know, where do you even begin with that? I think, you know, I don't know. The idea on one hand seems really good, but on the other hand, I don't know if it'd work and stuff like that. And would it not just be like a Northern team, for example? Dave and Carl on the Scouter podcast I listened to this morning, you know, the Northern teams, Liverpool and Man City, the Southern team is majority of these Spurs, Chelsea and Arsenal. So, you know, unless you put stipulations on it, that ain't going to work anyway. And saying that, you know, all the money would go back into the pyramid, absolutely wouldn't, because there's too many people who would be around that, you know, sort of occasion that would want to take their own slice of the pie, the money in their back pocket. And poor old Fleetwood Town and Tranmere Rovers are not getting anything out of that one, you know. So, yeah, I mean, we could go on forever and a day in terms of the wrongs within football. You know, maybe the international break is something we need, because, you know, as you said, it's a distraction that we all want in terms of having football and supporting Liverpool. And yeah, we've said earlier on that we probably do need a little bit of time away. And as much as, you know, you're conflicted in terms of what's going on in the UK, if you live here and all the royalty and stuff like that, that would probably be over by Tuesday and Wednesday. And, you know, you are going to be bombarded with international football. The only good thing I can say that is coming out of it is there's some lovely World Cup kits coming out. And if you are a fan of kits, and especially international kits, because they don't have sponsors plastered all over them, there is some really nice ones coming out there. And, you know, I might have to delve myself into a couple of international shirts just to, you know, please myself, because I have this pride thing where a lot of Scouts people do, where you don't wear your club shirt, but you'll wear shirts of other clubs.
You know,
the cap thing is a big thing at the moment for those lads who go away from home. They collect caps. I sort of wear foreign shirts, you know, for around the house and stuff like that. So there's a couple of nice ones coming out. So if you are looking for something nice in football at the moment, do check out a couple of international football shirts. The Dutch one looks splendid on Virgil as well, I must say.
Yeah, I was going to say, I quite fancy the idea of a Dutch one because of Virgil. But even, you know, as long as it was half decent looking, but that there will, I'm sure, be a link. But one shirt got leaked, didn't it, by mistake, because they were trying to hold it back. They were going to release it. It was going to be released this week, but they're going to hold it back because of all the stuff going on with the Queen. But they accidentally released it in a montage of, or if you like, a collection of shirts they're doing, and that was the England one. Have you seen that? Have you going to get your hands on that one? Can't see it myself.
No, it looks like Mike Ashley, sports director, come up with that one in about 4.5 minutes.
It's bad, isn't it?
But yeah, I mean, I suppose it suits the team. If you want a mediocre shirt to go with a mediocre team, you know, it sort of goes hand in hand. Harry Maguire will look great in it. Jack Grealish will look great in it. Crack on.
Yeah. Who makes the Dutch shirt then? Is it who their sponsors? It's Nike. I was going to say, because Nike can be a bit hit and miss, can't they, with the stuff. But, you know, I always used to love an Adidas one, but even they lost their way at times.
Nike have got, they've got a few countries, but what they've done is, you know, each country had their own sort of uniqueness, especially in the home shirts. So, you know, the Dutch one will have a pattern on. The Croatia shirts are always nice if you went to that sort of checkered pattern. But they've sort of got this collar thing that we've got sort of going on with our training kit, which I do like as well. At the moment, the sort of grey and red collar on the training kit, they've sort of, that's their mantra this season. And they've applied it to the Croatia shirt, but with the red and white checks, it sort of works. And the navy and sky blue one that Croatia wear a while as well looks really good. So, you know, if you are going to catch any of the World Cup and watch Modric do his stuff at 39 years of age or whatever he is these days, then at least you'll look good doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the World Cup is like, it's going to be strange having it on at the time of year we have it, but I'm sure we'll all be getting into it, and we'd be glad when, you know, just, it's just that thing, like when it's your own player involved, your own club player, and you see him going in for hard tackles or getting on the end of a hard tackle, you worry, don't you, throughout it. But it in a way, I suppose the World Cup is going to be a distraction in itself this winter, because wherever we are in the league, it gives us like an enforced mid-season break. I know it's not a break for the players, but it's a break for the clubs and for the football itself, and gives us something to look back at. And I'm sure it's going to be hyped to hell who's top of the league then and so on, as if that's it, the league's over. But of course, the way it is with Sky and the rest of them, the league's always over every weekend until the next day when it's all to play for again. And they just have this cycle, don't they? If it's all to play for this weekend, that's the league decider next day. No, that wasn't the league decider. Next week's the league decider, and we just all fall for it. It's just how football is. But I think that's another thing that's different as well with the World Cup, at least on these shores, is that it's not Sky and it's not BT covering it. So generally speaking, the coverage can be okay. It just depends. It's just, well, there's going to be a bit of Danny Murphy, I'm sure, so it's not all good, but, you know, it can be much better, the coverage. And maybe, I don't know, maybe lessons to be learned, because I do find that the terrestrial channels, as we call them, seem to be better at doing things than the pay channels.
Yeah, you'll get a mix of what is on Sky and BT, plus, you know, a mix of others. So, you know, you'll still get Micah Richards clowning about with a silly laugh, but then you do tend to get the odd, you know, ex-player. I think BBC are probably more adept at, you know, pulling out some old players from other countries who you quite like to listen to. I think they sort of, they have a niche market where they'll pull out a few ex-professionals who played in the league but are representatives of other countries, which often is a decent listen, better than ITV anyway. And you know, if I've just given the BBC credit there somehow, I don't know how I've managed to do that.
Yeah. I was actually thinking as well, like, I'm keep going back to this Queen stuff as well. Like, there's people watching all that stuff and that. I'm like, I'm surprised they've not done like a match of the day version of it every night. You know, all the stuff that's been going on, just done like a quick half hour. I've got Alan Shearer to say what he thinks, but, you know, maybe it's something there for him to think of next time when Monarch dies. I'm sure it won't be that long. But no, it's been a weird start to the season. I think we've both agreed that it's been a weird start, but I think there's things to be done, things to be improved. But I think the key thing out of all the stuff we've said today is what you said, that as the city, we're all, you know, we've always had to stick together, we've always had to work with each other, we've always got to have each other's backs. And as a club, when we've been doing that on the pitch and in the stands, that's when we've been at our best and that's when we've been at our strongest. You know, going back to when Bill Shankly talked about stuff like that, you know, all the way back to then, if we're all together in it, we're all fighting together, we've got the best chance ever, because no matter how good we are, that makes us better. So, how long till the next game? I think
that's October, what I think it is.
So between now and then, it's just about, you know, getting behind the team, you know, just looking at, you know, yeah, we need to say, why has the midfield been left to go to bare bones the way it has? But on the whole, those players who are there are the ones we've got to work with. And I don't think there's any player although there's players who haven't put the best games, I don't really think there's anyone who hasn't at least tried the best. They're just struggling. And yeah, we've got plenty of games going. We're going to try and get some more podcasts through as well, so you've got something to distract you as well while all this other stuff's going on. And hopefully back very, very soon. But thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.